fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side.
Welcome to the program. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And I'm very excited about today's program because it really melds a couple of areas I'm very interested in and have been for many, many years. Many years ago, I met my wife in a class that talked about the interplay of science and religion and metaphysics. And I've carried that with me all these decades. And today we're going to talk about a book who I think looks at things from a very interesting way. It's called Our Eternal Existence, A Metaphysical Perspective of Reality, Our Eternal Existence. And our guest today is the author of that book, David Gagan. And oh my goodness, does he have an impressive background. He received his BA in mathematics and a BS, a master's degree in electrical engineering. He spent 16 years designing and managing flight control systems, avionics, and cockpits for the Boeing company. He then joined the U.S. government senior executive service, where he spent 9 years in various director positions for the U.S. Army's and NASA's Electronic Research Laboratory. And for the last 16 years of his business career, he was CEO of Cobham Defense Electronic Systems Corp., a company he founded and grew into the world's leading defense microwave corporation. He was a first employee, and at his retirement, CDES had over 3,500 employees and $1 billion in annual revenue. And it's going to be really interesting to ask David how he got into metaphysics after that very erudite business career. David, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
Well, good to have you. And I guess that is my first question. I mean, my goodness, what an impressive background and impressive business career. But you'd almost think that somebody with knowing just that piece of your profile would say, well, what is this person doing writing a book about metaphysics? So I'll ask you, what is somebody like David Gagan doing writing a book about metaphysics? How did you get into all of this?
Well, you know, it's been my passion for all my life. When I was a teenager, my father would give me books on Velikovsky and Aku Aku for Easter Island and the pyramids and all of these crazy things, and I would be thinking, "The heck's going on around here?" And I spent my life trying to figure that out. Now, as it turned out, I needed to make a living, so I always liked science, so I got involved with science and business and such. But that was always my passion, and whenever you know, I did a lot of traveling in life, and when I was at you know, at a hotel at night and, you know, in the airport and on an airplane, I used all my extra time to look into things like, who am I, where am I, and why am I here? And that's how I got into it. It's really been my passion. And then when I retired a number of years ago, I was able to totally focus on it.
And that's great. I love the idea of a second act in pursuing that passion, and not just in kind of half-hearted way, but, you know, kind of going both the feet in. I think there's a perception out there among some, and I'd like to get your perspective on it, but that you're either hot or cold. In other words, you know, either you believe in the spiritual, the metaphysics, those types of things, but if you do, you're woo-woo and you have no respect or interest in science, or you're totally a scientific materialist who believes everything can be measured in a test tube or weighed on a scale, and you're either one or the other. Do you believe that is the broad perception out there, but do you also believe that is false?
Well, I do believe that's a real perception for a lot of people. But I think it's changing. I think people are beginning to realize that, you know, science isn't able to provide all the answers and religion isn't able to provide all the answers. So, you know, people are beginning to look around and they're looking for other things that make more sense. And when you get into things like metaphysics, it gives you far more answers than you can get out of science and religion. So I think people are becoming more open to it. And a lot of the people that you see that have put out some fabulous books, like Dr. Brian Weiss, who put out Many Lives, Many Masters, he started out, as a very scientific psychologist, and all of a sudden he ran into some things he couldn't explain. And a lot of people do that. Ian Stevenson, who ran the psychology department at University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. So you're finding, when you get involved in this stuff, and if you're honestly looking for answers, you can't find them in science these days or religion.
Right. And I feel the same way. And frankly, when it comes to science, I'm a huge respecter of science. We couldn't possibly do what we do now without science. We couldn't have this conversation without science, or have people all over the world be able to listen to this program. That's all because of advances in science. So I'm a great respecter, but I'm with you that it does not have to be all one or all the other. Now, you talked about metaphysics, and we hear that word kind of thrown around a lot, but maybe we could just kind of level set and give people your definition of metaphysics.
Okay. Metaphysics is, meta means beyond. And physics is, obviously the earth and the world around us, or at least that's how we perceive it. So what you're looking at with metaphysics is you're considering the physical, but you're looking beyond the physical. And I put metaphysics and spirituality as virtually the same, because I think that the world we live in is a spiritual world, and we think of it just as the physical, but the physical is just a piece of the spiritual world. So I put it's just looking at all of the answers. In other words, you look at what the science says, fine, but you also look at these ESP, you look at the paranormal evidence. So you're looking at everything that's on the table, psychology, everything that's on the table to try to figure out what the heck's going on.
Isn't it true that, within the last 20 years or so, that the scientific findings have just become stranger and stranger, and that, standard physics and a lot of the explanations that we had are being turned on their head, and scientists themselves are saying, what's going on here? Like you talked about Dr. Brian Weiss, that this doesn't make sense looking at it the way we've always looked at it?
You're absolutely right. Quantum mechanics, I think, is a good example. That's certainly been longer than 20 years, but some of the things that come out of the studies on things like quantum mechanics, where it says, hey, particles have a dual nature. They can be a particle, and I'm talking about matter here, or they can be a wave function. And light has the same thing. Light can be a photon, or it can be a ray. Well, as it turns out, so can we. We have a web-like nature, and we have an individual nature. And it's strange to realize that we're part of it. We're part of this strange concepts that we get out of quantum mechanics. Not only does it explain the physical world, it explains consciousness as well. People are just beginning to realize that, but our consciousness is it can be individual, which is what we see in this lifetime, or when we're back in the spiritual world full time, not incarnating back and forth, then we're embedded in our web-like nature. So you're right. It's coming together. It's strange what science is finding, and metaphysics, it turns out, has found it a good bit a while ago.
Now, something I want to ask you about, and I don't know if you cover it in the book or not, but people talk about the possibility that we're in some type of simulation. Now, to me, if you think about it, if you have a world and it is programmed by a programmer, not to be redundant, but it is programmed by a programmer, they create that world. If we're in a simulation, is it just simply another way of saying we're a creation of a divine power of God, the ultimate programmer? What do you think about the question of simulation, or is it simply we're talking semantics here? What do you think?
Well, I think it is a little bit of semantics, but our reality is an illusion, and all of the various realities are illusions. There are things that are real, and you and I are real. The world that we live in is like a simulation, but it's a reality, and it's a reality that we choose to come in, and it's an illusion because it's not what it seems to be. It's real, it exists, but it's not what it seems to be. And realities are created by your senses. In other words, there's all kinds of energy around us, and some of it we call matter. If it has a certain frequency and a certain intensity, then we can sense it with our five outer senses, and that's what we consider matter, and that's what we consider the physical world. But therefore we have a reality that's unique to us. And when we die, what we really do is we just change our focus. We are focused on this reality because of our outer senses. So we can experience it. When we die, we simply change our focus. Obviously, the body goes away, but our consciousness doesn't. And we change our focus, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in the astral field, as opposed to the physical field, but they're co-located. They're right here, and that's one of the reasons that you can communicate with your loved ones that have died, is because they really haven't gone very far. They've just changed state.
Now, I want to get your perspective on something that was really, really hit mega popularity several years ago, and it's still popular. Is the law of attraction. And I mean, I'll just give you my perspective on it. My opinion doesn't mean it's worth anything. It's just the way I think about it. I do think that if you have positive thoughts, positive visualization, those kind of things, it helps things trend in the right direction. On the other hand, I'm not one to believe that if I sit here and hope that the Mercedes appears in the driveway, that it's just going to materialize. I have to put some effort forth and have to do things and work hard or whatever that thing may be to make that happen. I think the combination for me is where the magic happens, although strangely enough, I don't have a Mercedes in the driveway. But but the point being that I think that if you work hard, but you have a constant negative attitude, I don't know how well that's going to work out for you. If you work hard and you have a positive attitude and you think, I can do this, I can make this work, I think you're going to have far greater results. I doubt very seriously your very successful business career just had you visualizing things and them happening. I'm sure that it was a lot of perspiration and sweat, blood, and tears, and probably, I'm guessing, a lot of positive thought. Now, I'm just guessing. What do you come down on the idea of the law of attraction and the ability of thoughts to influence events?
I agree with that absolutely 100%. It's our beliefs that create the world that we live in. We've got we come here as a personality. That's a creation of our soul, basically. And our soul tries to give us the experiences that we want to have. But the soul tries to figure out, well, what do we want? And it looks at your beliefs, and it looks at what you focus on, and it looks at what you think about. And it says, okay, that's the experience that they want to have. So if you have a positive attitude and you're trying to, for example, build a company and you're working hard at it, then your soul will say, okay, they want to experience this person or my personality that I've created, the soul is saying, wants to experience having a successful business. So I will let him have a successful business. And behind the scenes, the soul goes and creates the phenomena that it thinks the personality wants. So what you're really doing is like attracts likes. It's what your beliefs are. If you sit here and you think, my parents had cancer and I'm afraid I'm going to get cancer. And then what you do is you focus on every article that you see that says about cancer. And then, of course, you get on television and all the ads say, well, if you sneeze today, you undoubtedly have cancer. So you spend so much time focusing on it that your inner self says, all right, I'm focused on it. Obviously, they want to experience cancer. So you can actually draw it to you. You can create the phenomena by doing that. It's called a characteristic emotional climate, which is a big set of words, phrase, if you will, that basically says like attracts like.
And I just want to be clear on this, and you can clarify if I'm getting it wrong. You're not victim blaming or blaming people who have various physical ailments, but in essence, it's better for you on all aspects to accentuate the positive and think positively. Is that a fair assessment?
That's certainly fair. Nobody is a victim. Nobody is a victim of anything except their own beliefs. And we're here to try to understand and learn about our beliefs. And people, if they have cancer, it's not necessarily because they were focused on it. It certainly isn't a requirement to get it. But we get what we believe in. And other things, where there could be karma involved in it. There's a lot of different things that can cause it. But the bottom line is it's our beliefs and it's our decision making. And what we're trying to be taught here is the sacredness of the individual, and the individual has certain responsibilities, and we're basically a mind, and our mind has two products. It has thought and emotion. And that's basically it. And everything that gets created is something that we have created. That said, people that are suffering and having a difficult time, there's no way we can judge them. We don't know where they've been. We don't know where they're going. The best thing to do is try to help them through whatever they're involved with. It's in a very, very complicated world. And the only way we can really deal with it is not to judge them, no matter who they are or what they've done. It's to try to help them and assist them, because they're learning lessons that will benefit all of us. And some of the lessons out there, you could just look and you can see these are difficult lessons, very difficult lessons. And so all you can do is support these individuals as best you can, but judging them, we do make too much of judging, I'm afraid.
Yeah, again, you don't know that walk somebody walked in. For example, something as mundane as traffic. Somebody cuts you off in traffic. Well, that's not a good thing necessarily, but maybe somebody in their family's sick and they're rushing to get there, or maybe they just had an extremely bad day. And they're not being present, or they're not thinking. I'm not saying, if they cause an accident, they're liable. Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes, or somebody doesn't open a door for you. That's one of my pet peeves is like you let somebody into traffic and they don't wave. Because I always like to let at least one person in. My feeling is I let one person in, let the next person in. But when they don't wave, I'm like, but you don't know. Maybe they just got really bad news. Maybe they're preoccupied thinking about their next business appointment they're going on. It's really important. If all of us are looked at our worst, we've all had bad moments. Even if we've not done anything horrible like robbing or killing or anything like that, we pretty much all of us at one time or another, our worst moments, we've been there and we've done that. So I think that's a great point. Now, if
you know,
one
more thought on that, you know, if viewing somebody, viewing the world, viewing anybody in an instant in time is like going to a cinema and doing a critique on a movie and you've only seen one frame of the movie.
Right.
You don't know where it's been. You don't know where it's going. And that's the way, that's about what we would do and what we do when we judge other people.
Now, try to remember that next time I'm in a traffic jam.
It's not always easy.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
In the moment.
Now, if I understand correctly, you were raised Episcopalian. What are your thoughts currently on the question of God?
Well, I absolutely think there's a God, but it's not a personal God. It's a universal consciousness is probably an easier way to explain it. There is a massive intelligence out there, and we are part of that intelligence. Matter of fact, everything is part of that intelligence. All that is probably even a better example of it, a description of it. We are evolving, and it is helping us to evolve. There is guiding principles. The world is controlled. I mean, we have free will. Don't get me wrong, but this reality that we are in, this physical field, was a creation for the purpose of helping us evolve. As are all the other many, many, many realities that are created, and there is a greater being. I don't like to use the word, although I sometimes do. We don't have a personal God. The God is not personal, but we have many personal beings within this universal consciousness that are focused on us to help us do things. So even though we control our own evolution, We get great assistance, and we can get that assistance anytime we want it. And if it looks like we need it, we get the assistance automatically. So I absolutely believe that you could call it a God, but it doesn't function the way the Episcopalians, for example, think that it does, or any of the other religions think that it does. Metaphysics is very clear that there is absolutely a higher intelligence out there, and it's all loving and all supporting.
It certainly makes sense to me that there is a greater power. Absolutely. Now, you talked about consciousness. I mean, if it's, I think you say it's the fundamental building block of all reality. So does that mean my computer's conscious, my box of Kleenex over there? Or is it really just to biological living beings? When you talk about consciousness, who or what has it?
Everything has it. There is nothing that exists that isn't conscious. Now, it isn't conscious necessarily like you and I are conscious, but there is only one substance, and that's conscious energy, self-conscious energy. That's the only thing that exists. And everything, you and I, this computer, my desk, my car, the house, everything is a creation of that consciousness, that conscious energy. So everything is conscious. And you know very well that your pets are conscious. You see them.
Oh, sure.
You know, and well, plants are conscious too. And far more conscious than you can possibly imagine. But not as conscious as your pet is. And then you get minerals are conscious. Atoms are conscious. Everything. The only thing exists is conscious energy. So everything is conscious. But things like my computer here, it doesn't have a purpose. I mean, it has a purpose for me. But as a computer, it has no purpose. It's not trying to evolve. It's not trying to evolve into a bigger computer. It's just aware of itself. I'm not sure it's even aware of what it does. It's just it's the consciousness, but it is made of conscious energy. But you and I have risen to a different level of consciousness, so we do have a purpose. We do have things that we're trying to evolve into, and the components. And I'm talking about the atoms and molecules of this computer will leave this computer someday, and they'll continue to grow and continue to evolve, and they will someday be part of a consciousness like you and I. They're not now, but they are the same substance. Everything is a consciousness of some sort. All your organs have a consciousness. Your heart has a consciousness. It knows it knows what it's supposed to do. It knows it's supposed to beat and push blood through. It probably doesn't know why. I really don't know. But it functions at a certain level, which is different than how you and I function. And at the same point, there are spiritual beings that function at a much higher level than you and I do. And they recognize that you and I are conscious, but we're nowhere near as conscious as they are. We're nowhere as near as alive and as aware of themselves and their environment as we are. Everything is conscious. Weird thought, but everything is.
And you kind of anticipated my next question, because I was going to ask you about that kind of thing that we're all facing now, AI. I mean, my opinion has been, much like the internet, there are going to be some fantastic things that come from AI. I think there are some real dangers in it too, especially if we lose control of it, which seems to be likely if it becomes smarter than us through AGI. Can you talk a little bit more about AI and where you think all that fits in?
Yeah, I think AI is a tool that we can use. And if we let this tool just go and we follow it blindly, we're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But it's no different than any other tool in that it can help us if we use it wisely and say, okay, what do you think? You know, on the other hand, we allow it to decide whether we're going to have a nuclear war or not, that's a big mistake. You've got to get a higher level consciousness. AI is real. It's like software. It's real. It just does more things for us. It changes and it learns, but it's not perfect, and it's still no better than the guy who created the program, the AI program. And so we're going to have a whole bunch of problems coming along because of the person that created the program is human. And they are not going to build these things perfectly. So you're going to get a lot of misinformation out of it. And the longer you go, the better it's going to be. But you're never going to have the wisdom in it that you have in your own personal consciousness. You may have better calculating capabilities, but you'll never have the level of consciousness in AI that you have yourself. And the mistake will be the mistakes from the creation of the AI, and mistakes will be from the people that don't understand its limitations and don't understand how to use it.
Yeah, I just had an instance in broad, because I come from a radio background, and we have something called a broadcast calendar. And you would probably know this from your background working with radio. And the weeks start on Monday, which makes way more sense to me. And depending on how the weeks fall, you might have, like, you know, November 28th actually falling into the December broadcast month. And I had asked ChatGPT to give me, you know, the broadcast calendar for next year, because I was penciling in some ads and different things. And it was wrong. And I knew it was wrong the minute I looked at it. I'm like, that doesn't look right. And I checked the actual broadcast calendar, and it put out by the Radio Advertising Bureau, and it was wrong. And that's the key I say to people. And there have been times I've used AI for things. I'm just amazed. double check, trust, but verify. It's my right. view on AI. And it's a really interesting question. I think it's the biggest thing, certainly since the internet, and I think it will end up being maybe even bigger. We'll see what happens.
You know, I think the biggest problem with AI is people have more confidence in science than they should. And they don't realize science sells itself as the almighty and the know-all be-all, and medicine is falls in that category. And what people don't realize is that science has a half-life of about 18 months. And I don't know about you, but I was pretty good at science when I was a young man going to school 50 years, some odd years ago. And the questions that that I was asked and answered and got good marks on 50 years ago, I would flunk today because the answers have changed.
Well, that's and why. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And because of that, people don't see that. I mean, they you know, if they think about it, they acknowledge it, but they give science far more credit as knowing what's going on than the people that are actually in science. And if you're in a certain area, you can look at it and you say, well, you know, there's a whole bunch we don't know, and we're kind of guessing, and this is a theory, and we don't know what's going on really, but we're going to tell the world this because it's just the best we can figure out at the time. But it never comes out that way. Never comes out as a theory. It comes out as this is the hard, cold facts.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is they aren't.
Well, frankly, when I hear this following sentence, I wince because it's like, no, it isn't. My answer is no, it isn't. The science is settled. When somebody says the science is settled, it's like, really? You know everything about this particular question, and I'm not going to get into any specifics, but really the science is 100% settled? Because if it is, I think it's the first time in history, because there's so many things that we've been wrong about. So I agree with you fully on that point. Science is great. Don't get me wrong. Fantastic.
Right.
Saved, you know, life expectancy alone. You know, what was the life expectancy at the turn of the previous century? Was it like 55 or something? I mean, it's just amazing to me what science has done, but you can go too far with anything. And I think that that's what many people do. And science has become a religion, I think, which is unfortunate.
Oh,
which is unfortunate.
It has.
There's no question about it. So here's an easy question. he said facetiously. Death. So many of us are afraid of death. A lot of times because of the unknown, maybe the way we were raised, we're told we're going into a bad place if we're not, if we don't follow certain directions. Do we really need to be afraid of physical death?
No. No, death is... Death is basically a release from your day-to-day problems. Admittedly, if at some time in the future, you'll have to deal with those problems, but not right when you die. Your death is really just a transition, a change of focus to another reality. And it's an illusion as well, but it's a very different illusion with very different ground rules. It's a very happy place. What I think probably the biggest question that people have is, am I going to really disappear? You know, you try
right.
to have faith, you know, but are you going to disappear? And you can convince yourself, and nobody else can convince you, but you can convince yourself relatively easily that there is life after death and it's a good place to be. What you need to do is you need to find a medium, and you go to the medium and you tell them who you are, who you want to contact, and the relationship with who you want to contact. And that's it. You don't tell them anymore. And if they're a valid medium, and there's many out there, the loved one that you want to contact is, you know, will want to talk to you. And again, it's got to be somebody that you have a close relationship with or had a close relationship. It could be a parent. It could be a spouse. It could be a child. It could be a close friend. whoever it is, you will know, you two will have a bond. You will know things. You will work on things that nobody else is aware of. And certainly the medium's not aware of. And that person will know that they need to convince you that it's them that you're talking to. So what you can do is you can go and you can, this person will do the talking, the deceased person will do the talking to the medium through telepathy, and they will tell you things that could only be coming from the loved one that you lost. And then once you establish a relationship with this person, this medium, then you can ask questions and so on and so forth. But you will convince yourself that you can, you know, that who you're talking to. If indeed that the medium is unable to do this for you, then you need to walk out the door and go find another medium. Because there are people out there that say they're mediums and they're not. But there's an awful lot of really good ones too. And once you are able to communicate with the spiritual world and understand that it's a fine place, and you'll be very happy there, and you'll meet all your loved ones. It takes an awful lot of the fear. Matter of fact, it takes all of the fear out of death. Dying can be you know, difficult, but death itself, it's a big nothing. This life is like a business trip where you plan the trip with your pre-life plan. You go on the trip, things change, and everything doesn't work exactly like you think on a business trip. And you learn things, and then you go home and digest what you've learned. And that's what death is, simply the trip, going home and digesting what you learned on the trip.
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it. Very interesting. So to close out, tell us what people can expect if they pick up Our Eternal Existence, A Metaphysical Perspective of Reality.
You know, I think the best thing about the book is it explains what's going on in your life. And you can see yourself in a different perspective. You can realize that you are the one that's controlling your life. You are the one, it's by your decisions and your beliefs that are causing the good things in your life and the not so good things in your life. And the book also explains how you can change your beliefs. And there's nothing harder than changing your beliefs. But once your first step is to understand that your beliefs are causing you the problem. And in Our Eternal Existence, I go through and I explain how things work and why things work that way. And then I explain how you can handle what's the situations that you have. And I think it takes a lot of fear out of people's lives once they realize what's really happening to them and that they chose this life. You know, they have free will. They weren't forced to come here. This was not an accident, like science tells you, or too much of science tells you. This was a plan, and this plan is something that you're executing. It was your plan, and if things aren't going like you wanted to, you can change the plan.
Very good words of wisdom from David Gagin. David, where can people find this book, Our Eternal Existence, and find more information about everything you do?
Well, the book it will be available. It comes out in the United States and Canada, and really basically most of the world, December 1st. The UK, it comes out, it's being released November 24th. And you can go to Amazon and order it. Matter of fact, you can pre-order right now, and it will show up on your doorstep on December 1st, if you're in the United States. And Barnes & Noble, of course, will carry it. And you can find out about me and the book and order it through my website, which is davidgagin.com. And also, if you happen to live in the southern Florida area around Fort Myers, I have a metaphysical group. It's called the Sanibel Meetup, Sanibel Metaphysical Meetup Group. And it's free. I pick up all the costs for it. We get together and we talk about metaphysical ideas and thoughts. Anything that you're interested in, we'll talk about. And I encourage you to, if you're in the area, if you're down here, join up. You go to meetup.com and look for Sanibel Metaphysics.
Excellent. Our guest today has been David Gagan. We've been talking about his new book, Our Eternal Existence, A Metaphysical Perspective of Reality. David, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for tuning into the program, and I hope you found it as intellectually stimulating as I did. I love to talk about these big ideas with smart people, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.